Hello and welcome to this episode of the Scotland's Future Series podcast from the University of St Andrews. I'm Mike Gettenby, the University's Deputy Legal Officer. Today I'm very pleased to be joined by two colleagues, Professor Phillips O'Brien and Professor Stephen Gethins from the University's School of International Relations. Welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Stephen and Phil, you both recently went to Kiev on a trip organised by the university. Could you please tell us about it?
Sure, it was something that we have a number of people who have been working on different Ukraine-related projects, particularly since the Russian full-scale invasion of February 2022. People have been working with the UK government, the US government, with the Ukrainians, with Austro Academy. So we have some quite sort of deep links with different elements, and we thought it would be worthwhile. We hope the Ukrainians would find it worthwhile if we sent a delegation to just meet more people in person, face to face, talk about issues, see what was happening, to show our solidarity for the Ukrainian people in this moment. So we decided to go, and it was, I think, a very good decision.
Yeah, it was. I've worked on issues in Ukraine and issues relating to Ukraine for a long time now, but I think we were mindful of the fact that even though we'd do a lot of work, Phil in particular doing some really groundbreaking work on the war since Russia's full-scale invasion, we hadn't actually been back to the country.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of friends and colleagues who we've been working with, some of whom we met before, some of whom we knew, but some of whom we just hadn't met. And I think it's fair to say, for all the work that you can do on analysing what's going on, being there and speaking to people and engaging with them face to face, you just can't beat that. So we were fortunate. We gained funding, along with our colleagues Mark DeVore, Kristen Harkness, and Sir Hugh Strawn. We gained funding from the university's Impact Fund, and that allowed us to travel to Kyiv, working with partners there, and have some really good meetings. I'll just make this final point. I've been travelling to Ukraine for a number of years, since the Orange Revolution 20 years ago. And I traveled with a number of parliamentary delegations. I don't think I've ever had such a high level of engagement at a very senior level in government, parliament, NGO sector, and in the academic community as well as the media. It was a really fascinating and useful trip, actually.
That's great. And Phil, I want to pick up on something that Stephen said about actually being there. You've become a global voice. Yeah. Since February 22 through Twitter, through your regular Substack columns, you're somebody people are turning to for updates on as much the military, but other aspects of following the full-scale invasion by the Russians. How does it change your views, your approach, having actually been there?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that I'd spent a lot of my career writing about states at war. A lot of it, actually, in the early part of the 20th century, this First World War, Second World War. So a lot of my work has been about strategy making at the high point in the world wars. This was seeing a government, a state, a people at war, as opposed to writing about it. And it really sort of heightens your awareness of what they're going through.
Yeah.
That when a state is at war, it's in a different place. Yeah. We're used to states where we don't have war around us all the time. Even if our states are at war, and they have been at war for much of the past few decades, we don't experience that. But when you're in a place like Kyiv, which can be attacked by a missile at any time, where there are soldiers on the street, where people have lost huge numbers of family and friends, it adds, you realize that they're living this under enormous pressure, and they're trying to make very difficult decisions all the time. So I think that was the most important thing that came home, is just the kind of pressure they're operating under and the kinds of intensity of the events they're experiencing.
Okay, thank you. That's interesting from a background perspective for you and for us to get an understanding of how that might change your views going forward. In terms of the people you were meeting, was it a cross-section?
Yeah, it was. So we met with a number of government ministers. We met with senior representatives of the military, very senior. We met with the National Security Council chair, Danilov. So we were meeting with people at a very senior level, taking big decisions at a day-to-day level, as well as having that access at a senior level of people who were keen to hear from Hugh and Mark and Kristen and Phil about their insights, because I noticed that there was a real discussion. It was also interesting meeting with parliamentarians, NGO sector, even just friends and some journalists to give their reflections. Because I think one of the things that Phil and I were discussing was how interesting it was to see a democracy at war, a society that is not so very different from our own, and how they coped with the daily stresses, the daily stresses of war. You know, there were air raids when we were there. It was we were quite safe, and we were very well looked after. But the amount of stress and strain, and I noticed the fact that you know, friends that I'd met with, for example, Andriy Shevchenko, who's now Deputy Defence Minister, is an old friend. Lost his brother very recently in Bakhmut. So that human element is very clear. And Andriy would be the first person to say that he is not alone in the personal loss that he has had, that so many people have had that personal loss. So seeing the way that society is evolving and how it copes with war was, at a human level, quite difficult at times, but I think very important.
It also, it made the meetings quite intense, in the sense that there was no protocol. Yeah. There was very little, there was no frippery. Often when you go on delegation meetings, that there's these moments of, you know, here passing of gifts and all this.
The niceties.
Frippery, yes, and niceties, and they couldn't care left. I mean, Zelensky's sweatshirt is a political statement, but that's shared across the Ukrainian state. They're not dressed up in suits. Yeah. They're not worried about, will you be offended or not offended? And what's interesting is they don't want to spend time listening to you if you don't have something useful to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that some of them are like, okay, let's get to the point here. You know, we don't need to have a lot of an introduction or wasted time. What's the point of this meeting and what can we gain from it? So it has a different pace of meeting, I found. And it really was the focus on practicalities, which I found very refreshing.
Yes.
And different than other delegations.
And that interesting balance, that one of the things that Zelensky has done so well is kept the war in the spotlight outside of Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something that's really notable, whether it's been parliamentary visits, whether it has been through social media, you know, a war that is being viewed on social media and viewed differently by different generations because of what social media they use. But then the other side of that is they are still fighting a war, so they don't have time.
No, look, they are. One night we were out, now we were obviously focused on the war itself, but I'll give you an example. We met with one of the MPs who is working, for example, who was great company. We had dinner with a number of MPs one night, and I was speaking to one of them who I know, and she is dealing with children who've been seized by the Russians. Yeah. That's what she's focusing in on. Mm-hmm. And that was harrowing. And to work on that is harrowing. But what I was really struck by was, I think as Phil said, the seriousness with which everybody's taking it. Mm. Nobody was unpleasant, they were very pleasant, but the seriousness, the businesslike, and they know they've got a job to do. But these were, at this dinner, members of parliament who were quite young, with huge amounts of responsibility being placed on their shoulders. And it was quite humbling to get that insight into what the burden that they are carrying. And I only mention those members of parliament because this is a burden that's being carried by pretty much every single member of society at the highest levels who are taking life and death decisions, right down to people just trying to get on with their lives without key workers because they're sitting at the front line at the moment.
And, you know, having gone on for so long, 2014 is whenever Russian forces first invaded Ukraine, full-scale invasion. Mm-hmm. Is getting on for 18 months ago. Yep. To have that day after day, and it gets more harrowing. You talked about dealing with children who had been taken by Russian forces. That to have that, making up to that every single day, I couldn't imagine what it was like.
And we were, I mean, just fortuitously lucky in the timing when the attacks, I mean, once we left, the attacks on Kyiv really ramped up. So we had just a small taste of what they're going through and what they've actually been going through, say, in May and early June with the really regular attacks.
Yeah.
And even then, everyone has an app on their phone about when a missile is coming and when you should go to the shelter. And it's omnipresent. So it also provides a strange contrast because when you go through the city, on the one hand, you think you're just walking through a European capital. There's very trendy cafes, young people on the streets, It just looks normal. The theaters are there. The opera was doing Tosca, I think. It was a city that you would think this is a normal, in fact, quite bustling European capital. And yet, you could have an air raid sort of sign at time. Or you'll come around the corner and there'll be tank traps or a displayed ruined Russian tank. So it was a very fascinating juxtaposition between these two.
And you meet people, MPs, political, military, people who've been serving the military for their careers. Was it clear there's that common united purpose? Yes, there might be practical issues that people need to debate, discuss.
It was astonishing. So let me talk about the political side of it, which I know a little bit better. I was astonished that opposition MPs, you know, you would sit with a group of MPs and you wouldn't know which... if they were opposition or they were government. The reason being, they would be openly debating, discussing and talking about. So there was that unity of purpose around the war and what needed to be done. And I found that striking. Now, that's not to say, and if you speak to somebody like Lesia Vasilienko, who came to visit the university and who we saw when we were over, Lesia sits in opposition. And people like Lesia and her colleagues in opposition know that they have a job to do, which is to interrogate, challenge, put forward new ideas. But the same way in any democracy. So I found the level of debate very constructive. But they weren't letting the government off the hook, nor should they. And what I found really interesting, and Phil's written a little bit about this, was looking at that, as Phil mentioned earlier on in this podcast, a democracy at war. And the ways that democracies are better, for all their flaws, and they have many flaws, as we know, are better at reaching decisions because you debate and you discuss and you interrogate and you challenge. And by doing so, you hopefully try and reach a better decision. And if you can compare that with, say, the Kremlin, where we understand the decision making is getting narrower and narrower and narrower and narrower, and then you make mistakes because you're not challenging received wisdom.
And it was an interesting thing that the war has also, particularly since the full-scale invasion, supercharged their democracy.
Yeah.
I mean, Ukraine has many systems. This was not a perfect democracy for years. It struggled with issues, as we all do, of corruption and the like. But February seemed to represent a fascinating moment for them, and it gave them a certain confidence. I don't want to say they didn't have it before, but when I was talking to a number of Ukrainians, quite senior ones, they said, we thought we would fight, but we didn't quite know. We didn't know how well we would fight. Yeah. And on February 25th, they sort of woke up as a nation with greater confidence than they had in themselves on February 23rd. You know, they're going through the first day and realizing, we're still here. Many people have written us off. Yeah, and that's many people in major Western capitals and said, Kyiv will fall in a week. But they said no. We're going to fight. And I don't think we can underestimate that importance on Ukrainian politics and Ukrainian society. They're going to be a more vibrant democratic state going forward. And that they now have something they're fighting for. They're fighting for their own future, for their future in Europe, for a future in NATO, for security for themselves and their families.
Yeah. No, that comes across when you hear somebody like Zelensky speaking for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Compared to the pictures that we occasionally get of Putin in Kremlin, isolated, scowling at generals, whereas Zelensky, you have seen him coming to, like I said, parliaments, etc. And you really feel he is speaking on behalf of the people. It's really notable. Stephen, on that point about democracies versus autocracies, do you think... We have not heard much from the Russian side about people objecting to the war in Ukraine. There has been some media reporting around that. But do you think that, it works as a comparator of two different systems very neatly in some ways?
It does. Look, Russia is one of the most dangerous countries in the world to be an investigative journalist or an opposition politician. I mean, I saw recently people talking about, you know, if you want to talk about secession from one of the many republics within the Russian Federation, that is a criminal offence. We are seeing the trial of opposition leaders, people being locked up. It is very, very, very dangerous to voice your opposition. So it's really difficult in Russia to get a clear idea about what's going on. That being said, We do know that Russian propaganda has been reasonably successful in parts of the broader society. But we do know in Russia, and this has been the case for years, that the Russian decision-making process is very narrow. Yeah. And I think that you see that when Russia makes some pretty bad decisions, the most fundamentally bad decision being the decision to launch a full-scale invasion, for which, as Phillips has written, they were not prepared and they not planned for. And that's been disastrous. And although we reflect on the awful loss in Ukrainian lives, there's been the most devastating loss in Russian lives, and often from some of the more remote republics, yeah, far away from Moscow, certainly in the east of the country and elsewhere, hundreds of thousands of young men and women who will be scarred by this war, this awful decision for life. So I don't think we should ever lose sight of this.
Absolutely.
Russia is an autocracy. Ukraine is a democracy, albeit an imperfect democracy, as all democracies are. And comparing and contrasting that is something which should be at the foremost of the mind. And finally, I think we should also reflect on the failures that we as a society had before the war in terms of the polarization in politics and misinformation, and also areas like finance as well. Yes, it was about the military stuff and our failures in Crimea, but we also failed when it came to Chechnya, Syria, and elsewhere. Vladimir Putin is not a new problem.
No. Going forward, university has, there's been a lot of support for Ukraine. There has been groups like the one that went out. There's been a lot of debate, discussion within the university support for Ukrainian students. How important do you think that is going forward, and how best can the university, I'll start with the university before I talk about the wider UK, support Ukraine going forward?
Well, the big thing, I think, from the point of view of, say, the University of St. Andrews, is to help maintain European support for Ukraine, which is still strong. I mean, one thing I would say people have not understood in this going into the war is people thought, Europeans and Americans would get bored. Yeah. Oh, after a few months, they'll move on to something else and TikTok videos and they'll forget about Ukraine. But they haven't. They've remained committed to it, though it's important that that commitment remain as strong as possible. That it matters to the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians really value the support they've received from outside, that they've received from other countries in Europe. And I think to let them know that that support remains and is strong and that people will stand by Ukraine is a very important both material and moral role that we can play. You know, it's not to be war tourists. We shouldn't go back unless we can help.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely
the other thing. You know, don't go to Ukraine if what you want to do is just, you know, have to take a picture that I was at Ukraine. Go if you feel you can do some good.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
And the university's got an important role to play in terms of informing, challenging, and also, you know, we've got our key partnerships with Austro Academy and with others that we're working with. And I was fortunate enough, I met a group of fantastic students and staff members from UK who are enriching our life here in St. Andrews. But I think we've also got an important role to play in continuing that work, continuing that study. And that will, from time to time, mean that we've got something uncomfortable to say. But I think a final message that I took from Ukraine was, when we've got something uncomfortable to say, as long as it's based on research and insight, then it's something that is welcome. And that's where that debate and discussion is so important to Ukraine's success, and it's actually something for us to reflect on as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you, Stephen, Phillips.
Thank you, Mike.
Very much for your insight.
Thank you.
I know we have done a few podcasts around Ukraine. I think it's something we will sadly have to come back to, hopefully at some point, talking about rebuilding. Instead of war.
Yep.
And thank you to you for listening to this podcast, for supporting this podcast series, or watching it on YouTube. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you.